RavingLunaticMania.com.
Okay, Abrams, I'll give you that one. Cameron did copy there. After all, he did it with Avatar. But is that so bad? You only expanded upon the ideas.
Oh, I agree. But that means you can't be upset that I expand upon things.
JJ, you ripped off an entire plot because you can't finish one. So no, you can't claim expanding. So what's your next one, Abrams?
I figured we'd do the two things that I have had the honor of working with. Star Wars and Star Trek.
Careful, Abrams.
Hear me out. We all know Lucas borrowed themes such as Arthurian myth, samurai and Western tropes, and even Joseph Campbell's Hero of a Thousand Faces. But did you know he also borrowed heavily from Frank Herbert's Dune?
Okay, so there's a desert planet. So what? Tatooine is Arrakis.
Well, you also have a mystic order with supernatural abilities, drugs are called spice, a messianic main hero, a giant worm.
I got it. Well, let the losers on sci-fi morons talk about that. But what about Star Trek? A genius like Roddenberry does he need to copy?
I don't think he did exactly. The show did, though. The Borg are mysteriously like the Cybermen from Doctor...
I'm no Doctor Who charlatan! I'm sure that was just a coincidence like last week's comparisons. Why not let the experts talk about it, and you can go write some fan theory, turn it into a movie without a plot, and reap millions for doing nothing?
Sounds like a plan.
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 83, Star Copy Wars. Kill, kill, kill the enemy. Kill, kill, kill the enemy. Oh, wait, that's last week, and I was kind of reminded that when I heard that conversation on the intro there, but J.J. Abrams, not the enemy. Not a great writer. Not the enemy.
There's only two people, enemy and not enemy.
So J.J. Abrams, not the enemy. Can't believe I'm saying that.
Why can't we just do creator, not creator?
Douche, not douche. J.J. Abrams, douche.
Wow, geez. I think you guys give him more venom than I do sometimes.
Only sometimes.
This is being one of those times.
So we've been talking all this month, and tonight we're definitely not recording this podcast just about 18 minutes after we finished recording Symptom 83.
What?
At 10:30 at night.
Not at all.
No, this is absolutely another week later. But all this month, we've been discussing creators who maybe aren't creating, but copying and lifting ideas and concepts from works that came before them. This week, we're going to expand upon this. It's one thing to be influenced by or to, as in the case of last week, blatantly copy ideas from someone who came before you. But is it a different thing to expand a concept out to its logical conclusion or to put a different twist on a concept? And we're going to talk about two examples here. The first is the Borg versus Doctor Who's Cybermen. And the second is, what exactly did George Lucas steal from Frank Herbert?
If anything.
Because I can't prove it. But it's the evidence is pretty
substantial.
Yeah, there's some good circumstantial evidence there that makes it look like George Lucas may have borrowed or, shall we say, expanded upon some concepts introduced in Dune. And that's really where we're going this week. Is it okay to expand upon an idea? And I think we're going to start with the one that's going to take less time to discuss here, the Borg and the Cybermen. In Star Trek, the Borg are human machine cyborgs. They're mostly humans with cybernetic parts attached to them. It's probably about a 50-50, 60-40, depending on which Borg you're looking at, ratio here. You're also linked into a hive mind.
If you're 7 of 9, it's about 90-10, but whatever.
Right? If you're 7 of 9, it's about 40%. It's about 30% cyborg, 30% human, 40% boobs.
Six of half, half a dozen of another.
7 of sex appeal, 7 of fan service.
Yep. We're going back to
7 of cosplay.
We're going back to Discovery now, aren't we?
Well, I mean, I'm just bringing
We all know why she was put on there.
Yeah. Needed to punch up the sex appeal.
Pre to Paul Star Trek.
Yes, pretty much.
All before to Paul. But I digress here, though. The Borg are generally cybernetic beings with probably about 50% human, 50% cyborg. They're also linked into a hive mind, and they have one concept, and that is to assimilate everyone into their collective and to achieve perfection.
Yep.
That's the Borg in a nutshell.
I mean, there's just a teeny bit more to that, but it's basically that. The idea that everybody, you will be assimilated, resistance is futile, and basically your energy weapons work once or twice until the Borg have analyzed your defenses and assault capabilities, and basically they're immune to it.
We have analyzed your defensive capabilities and find them unable to resist us. You will be assimilated.
Yeah.
Resistance is futile.
You will all become one with the Borg.
Right.
You too will become one with the Borg.
It's pretty straightforward.
I don't want to become one with the Borg.
No.
I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good.
The Cybermen, on the other hand, we're not going to go into the long history of the Cybermen, because that starts in 1966 on the episode 10th Planet, which is Doctor Who Season 2, the original Season 2 classic.
Yeah, so in simpler terms, the Cybermen came way before
but
the
basics
Borg.
Are that they are a group of humans.
Humanoids.
They're humans who have been put inside robots.
Nope,
their brains
humanoids.
Are. They were on an alternate Earth.
No,
in 10th Planet, it was... Okay, you're going to make me pull it up.
We're not going to have a Borg Henderson.
It was an alternate Earth.
Human, humanoid, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, whatever.
Alternate Earth of humans who have been put into robots or some such. And
is the brain. Human brain inside of...
That's all I'm trying to say. And so what they're trying to do is take over humanity by making them all like them. And there's different incarnations, different stories. We don't have time to go into it, but the basics are this, that the Cybermen walk around, capture people, and instead of saying you will be assimilated, say you will be like us. And depending on the season you watch, there's different ways to stop them. One is gold. Another one is to destroy their inhibitor chips, and that'll cause them to go nuts and their heads to blow up. But they're a constant thorn in the Doctor's side. So what are the similarities?
Well, you can
here?
Also overcome Cybermen with the power of love, which is the Doctor's favorite way to overcome.
There's that one too. Don't remind me
And
of
the
that
origin
one.
Stories are a little different.
Well, correct me also. Correct me also if I'm wrong.
There's three separate strings of Cybermen. So.
Right. Yeah. There's been three iterations. I mean, they're all a thorn to the Doctor. And in keeping with the theme, the Doctor remembers them each time.
Yeah, I'm just saying, there's three different, completely different lines, I guess, of Cybermen.
Right, right.
So,
correct me if I'm wrong here, too. If you switch off the Cybermen's emotional inhibitor, they pretty much instantly behave like regular humans again. They hate what they've become.
Well,
they feel remorse for what they've done.
I can't speak to the earlier seasons.
They can remember who they were.
That's the third string.
Yeah, that's the third string. Okay. If you shut off their inhibitor chip, they kind of go nuts.
That's not the first two. Yeah, the first two really
didn't have that.
Yeah. Those were just already brains inside of a shell, and they were... 100.
You can disconnect the Borg from the hive mind, but it takes a while for their humanity to reassert itself, if ever.
Yeah, and there's not really, I mean, except in the third iteration where, what's his name, Dr. Limus or whatever, he became kind of a hive mind for them, but he also dies.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
and then the Cybermen come back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Cybermen really don't have a hive mind.
Not really,
They communicate with one another, and, I mean, it's more of, I wouldn't call it a hive mind as much as communication.
Yeah, they had a directive maker, but he didn't last but 10 minutes, so...
Yeah, and again, that's the newest one.
Right, yeah.
Did you make an argument for the Borg to the Dalek as well?
The what?
Dalek? Dalek?
Dalek.
Dalek?
Dalek. The Daleks? Yeah, those are another thorn in Doctor Who's...
So I guess I'm looking at it like this. The Borg are absolutely... influenced by the Cybermen. I'm not saying that you don't get Borg without Cybermen, but there's too many similarities to say that the creators of Star Trek, the writers of Star Trek, aren't pulling from this and influenced by it. They're creating their big bad villain. They're too similar. In a way, though, all cyborg races would behave the same way.
Yeah, this is the thing where it's like it's a cyborg race that enslaves, you know, conquers, you know, assimilates. It's kind of a, as we mentioned earlier at the beginning, it's an archetype.
Right.
So it's going to kind of follow a pretty set
path. I'm not a Whovian. I'm not going to claim to be. I know enough about Doctor Who, seen enough to know the basic concepts. Obviously, I couldn't remember if it's pronounced Dalek or Dalek.
Dalek.
I couldn't remember that. But I've seen it. I know what they are. I know they're the big bad. I know the Cybermen are also, you know, one of the biggest enemies that he's going to face. But to me, the Borg are the ultimate evolution and expansion of the Cybermen. If you took this concept and you expanded it out as far as you could go with it to a spacefaring civilization of cybernetic machines, then a hive mind makes sense. And everything about the Borg makes sense as the ultimate evolution of this cybernetic enemy. And to me, what you've done here in Star Trek isn't copied something, because the Borg are not bit-for-bit copies of the Cybermen. They are different. They're similar in the way that all cybernetic races would have to be similar. But there are significant differences. First and foremost, the fact that they are a hive mind. Secondly, the Borg are evil without wanting to be evil. The Borg don't think they're evil. The Borg simply have a directive.
They don't think.
Their directive is seek perfection and assimilate everything that is unique and distinctive and useful. And the Borg don't assimilate individuals. They assimilate species. The Borg are looking to create this perfect cybernetic society. That's what they're driven by. They're not driven to be evil. And that's the scariest evil of all. Yeah. It kind of is. And the Borg are meant to be terrifying. They're similar, but they're an expansion of a concept. So I would agree with something if you told me that the high concept of the Borg comes from the Cybermen and that the ownership of that is Doctor Who, then I've got to agree with you. Although I might give it to Asimov with iRobot again.
That's true.
And wonder if every single sentient robot, cybernetic robot, doesn't go back to Asimov, and that everyone who tells that story isn't just expanding on Asimov's idea or doing a variation on Asimov's theme.
Right. And again, if we look back, we have to always give credit to him because he did. That is really the first time you ever see anything like that. So congratulations, he did come up with something original, and then everyone's kind of expanded on it in different ways looked at it a different way. So, I mean, obviously, that's where we're going with this.
I think that's a case more of like with Outlaw Star, there are some striking similarities, but that's about it. Because conceptually, what they were doing, their end goal, how can it be anything different if you're making that kind of an entity? So it was just a very good striking similarity. But where we go next, as a Star Wars fan, I dare not. I tread carefully. I tread with trepidation.
So we haven't talked about Dune much on this podcast. And that's probably because, Thomas, are you a Dune fan?
A little bit.
I know Corey hasn't read any of it. Mark has watched the sci-fi
as much as you guys. Not as much as you guys.
I've watched all the movies, and I've yet to read a book. I know, mea culpa, but I do find it a very fascinating setting.
I on the other hand, have read every single Dune novel there is, including the good and bad.
There's a bad
expanded stories. Well, there is the one where Paul runs away to join the Intergalactic Circus.
Okay, that's bad.
That's a whole story.
I thought
no, I was but also there is a part of one of the new novels that they've decided to tell in between the original Frank Herbert novels, where Paul runs off to join the circus. Ugh. Oh, and there's also one that if you ever wanted to see the worst knife fight ever between Gurney Halleck and Duncan Idaho, in which neither one is actually trying to kill the other one, well, that's the novel for you.
Which sucks because Gurney Halleck and Duncan Idaho, man, that's got to be the best fight ever.
You're just sitting there going, oh my God, this is amazing. I mean, this would be like, this is like Vader versus the Emperor if both were good guys. Or not Vader versus the Emperor, Yoda versus the Emperor if both were good guys. Because Gurney and Duncan are both good guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be epic, man. This would be like Yoda fighting Obi-Wan, except that they were equally matched.
Yeah.
Maybe Obi-Wan versus Anakin, but Anakin had turned. So I really can't make the, anyway.
The point is, it'd be awesome.
The point is, if you've been reading Dune and you're 20 novels in and you're going to, whoa, these two are going to fight. And then it's just lame as can be. I mean,
we can't kill them. So let's just make it a lame fight. Thanks, guys. Great.
If you really don't want either one to kill the other one or get the better of the other one, don't have it happen. Anyway, I've read every single Dune novel. I will tell you that I can see where George Lucas borrowed from Dune. And you will have a very hard time convincing me that someone who has admitted that he synthesized old samurai movies and westerns into creating Star Wars didn't happen to borrow from Dune. So I'll give you a little synopsis of the Dune universe for those of you who don't know Dune. And
it's what's possible, wrong with you?
But it's very possible that some of you aren't. Dune takes place on a complete desert planet that has no water.
You'll see the new movie coming up, by the way.
Which I recommend seeing because it's done by the director who did Blade Runner 2049. And he will be the perfect choice for a talky, slow movie like this. But Dune takes place in a full desert planet with no water whatsoever. Does that sound familiar? Living in the desert on Dune are giant worms. Now, look, they make Jabba the Hutt look like nothing, but you've got giant worms. Also, the third Dune book, God Emperor... No, I'm sorry, the fourth Dune book, God Emperor. Lado, Paul Muad'Dib's son, becomes a human worm hybrid that rules from his throne on his desert planet. No, Jabba's not stolen from that at all. No, Jabba is not at all some variation of Lado the God King who's half human, half sandworm. But we'll go a little further than this. There's comparisons. You have Paul Muad'Dib, who is a messianic character who is going to lead the group of indigenous desert people of Arrakis to freedom. Paul Muad'Dib is going to lead the Fremen to their place of ascension, and he's going to save the galaxy from darkness. That's his golden path. His job is to keep humanity from going extinct and being given over to darkness and war. You also have the Bene Gesserit. The Bene Gesserit are a group of women only. Well, Paul is the male Bene Gesserit. He's the Kwisatz Haderach, who is the one male who can look inside and have the ancestral memories that the Bene Gesserit have. The Bene Gesserit are able to control the functions of their bodies on a molecular level. They can choose whether they're going to have a male or female child. They can extend their life by these methods. And through some of their unique powers, they gain faster reflexes. And they have the ability to access the genetic memory of every female ancestor in their lineage.
They can also give someone a disease to turn them into a disgusting human being if they're being raped.
Yeah, that's that controlling every single aspect of your body. So we start to look at the things that George Lucas copied here. I think it's pretty safe to say that Arrakis and Tatooine
is together. You know,
would Scott, anyone question that?
No. Can I jump in,
no,
Scott?
No.
May I? Well, yeah, I'm going to
absolutely.
Jump in. So, George, I had to look this up because I hate to admit this, but George Lucas admits that Dune was an inspiration. He was unabashed about it. And in fact, apparently, if you looked at early scripts for this, it was called The Star Wars at the time. It was far more similar. You had computing houses. You had a shipment of aura spice that had to be protected instead of Death Star plans. A lot of other things that basically got scrapped in the end.
Well, you better, because otherwise it starts to become plagiarism.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not the Star Wars, it's Dune. Brought to the big screen.
I think for me, it was unlike what we did with Cameron, what Lucas did was, did he take from Dune? Yes. But Dune was one of those things that really took science fiction and turned it into epic storytelling and mythology. Because up until that point, a lot of science fiction was
the future or a gadget or something like that. No one took a mythology or Dostoevsky type story and said, let's make that sci-fi. That wasn't a common thing. And Frank Herbert did that. And Lucas, who was already borrowing from samurai tropes and mythology himself, just kind of picked up and ran the ball. So now, does that mean he didn't borrow heavily? He did. I hate to admit it. But the difference here is he was borrowing theme, whereas Cameron was flat out saying, I'm going to take this story, tweak here, tweak there, tweak here, mine. And that's where I'm going to... Now, here, let me throw that out there so Scott King doesn't have to say it for me. I'll say it for him. I'm being biased. Happy. Moving on.
Well, I'm not sure that James Cameron did anything more than borrow theme and concept, because as we said in the last episode, I don't think that any of the plot points, if you put Terminator's plot points side by side with any of those Ellison plays, they differ, except for the first 5 minutes of Soldier.
Well, but I already voiced my opinion in the last episode, I'm not changing my mind.
Dune also is a very extensive universe with a lot of ideas to it. So, I mean, Star Wars isn't the only one that has been, took stuff from Dune.
No,
many franchises took from Dune.
Well, I mean, there's no one of the first laws of the Dune universe is you shall not make a machine in the image of the human mind. Well, no thinking machines. You can't even have a calculator.
Whereas Star Wars has droids. And that is a thinking machine. In fact, they're like people.
Oh, there's differences. But so let's talk about some of the other similarities. Well,
I got a whole list.
Go ahead.
Princess Leia sounds possibly like Aaliyah.
Aaliyah?
That's a minor one. Let's see. We just did the planet. Let's see. Moisture farmers are like dew collectors. The drugs are called spice, obviously. Jedi mind trick could be the voice.
Yeah, well, and that's the big one. The Jedi used Obi-Wan. These are not the droids you're looking for. The Bene Gesserit have the command voice, and if they speak in the voice, you will do what they tell you to do.
Yeah.
Whether you want to or not.
The Jedi's control is and you just mentioned the Bene Gesserit can control as well the force. It wasn't called the force, but, same... It's just a different method there, I guess. What do they call it? Prana Bindu. Yeah. Let's see what else we got. Later on, you have the Trade Federation and the Spacing Guild. I guess that could be considered something. Those are just a couple. I guess you could do the Sand People and the Fremen, but the difference I would do there is the Fremen are far more important than the Sand People.
The Fremen are central to the original, to the first couple novels. They become far less central after the first couple novels are done, because they're going to be Paul's army.
Yeah, but the other one I'd say, I guess, is Jabba the Hutt and the Worms, but I guess.
Because
Jabba the Hutt wasn't vital to Dune. If you take away the worms, the space is in a mess. I mean, the end of the original movie with Sting has Arrakis having rain. You just disrupted the whole order of things and the economy of the galaxy.
There'll be no spice. And if there's no spice, the navigators can't see paths through hyperspace. And it'll degenerate.
Everything's
each planet
gone.
Being on its own. There'll be no intergalactic
Everything's
commerce.
Gone. Whereas when Jabba the Hutt dies, it's okay. One less crime syndicate.
So, but I think there's a big one that we haven't gotten to. Okay. And that's Luke and Paul Muad'Dib.
Well, yeah, okay, I was saving that one.
So Paul Atreides is the son of Leto Atreides, and Paul is definitely a messianic figure, and I think there's an argument to make of Luke being a messianic figure, and both are young men. Paul is not an adult. He's like 13 or 14 when the concepts of what's going on in the first novel happen. Luke is about 18, and he's got to save the galaxy.
I would argue that, but I don't know. Let me try this and see what it happens. Luke is a messianic figure, not because Anakin is supposed to be the messianic figure, but he blows it.
And Leto is supposed to be, but Leto blows it.
Okay, because see, I wouldn't know that part because Anakin was meant to be, but he blows it. And Lucas has said explicitly that, like the old Viking myths or myths of old, of ancient times, we're talking about a family saga here. And Luke is, the children are supposed to redeem the sins of the fathers. And so, but I guess, Scott, you just mentioned
I got to backtrack. So, okay. I got to backtrack. Leto is not a failed Kwisatz Haderach. There's another supposed predecessor to Paul. Leto was never on that line. Leto was simply a ruler. But I guess what I'm saying is when you read the first novel, when Leto dies, you are surprised because you think this is going to be a story about him.
Okay.
He's the good ruler of Caladan, and he's going to be the ideal lord. You know, Leto is a duke. He's Duke Leto Atreides. And he is the ideal duke that you would want to live under and that you love your duke and you will work for him because he's the fair ruler. He's supposed to represent the best of feudalism. But he loses to the evil Baron Harkonnen. And Paul has to redeem that failure. So Paul is that redemptive. He's going to redeem his father's failure. And he's going to triumph over his father's enemies. So you have a messianic character in Paul, and you have a messianic character in Luke. But Paul is the male Bene Gesserit. Paul can use the voice.
That's right.
Paul has access to all of his ancestral memories and can have conversations with his father. Right. So you have these ghost conversations like with Obi-Wan, okay? Mm-hmm. Except Paul's going to have those conversations with his other ancestors from the other side and commune with them. There are similarities there between Luke's abilities and Paul's abilities. You have this young male messianic character with access to supernatural abilities and psionic abilities.
Yeah. I would say that, you know,
it's different.
Not knowing so much about Dune, but knowing more about Star Wars, I've always contended Star Wars is not science fiction. It's mythological family saga set in space.
That's a mouthful.
And that's even Lucas's own words right there. Now, you can disagree with me and call it sci-fi if you want, but I'm going to call otherwise. And it seems to me like Herbert is making, if not a mythology set in space, definitely much more of a saga, a family saga. Because does he get really hooked in about the sci-fi, like the type of technology and all that stuff, or is he more focused on the politics, the interactions,
and this is the difference. And I'm going to go back one thing before I go into that too, because I know there's probably people screaming at me that there's no way Paul Muad'Dib and Luke are the same character. No, not at all. They're very different characters. They have very different motivations, very different walks of life. Okay, and I'm not trying to say that Duke Leto Atreides is a metaphor or the standing character for Vader. They're all very different, completely different. But if you want to see some of the similarities and you said, maybe I'll use Paul Muad'Dib as a model for Luke and I will give him some of that aspect and then change that character, fine. But I can see similarities between your main protagonist of Paul Atreides and Luke Skywalker. They're there. Are they the same character? No. They're different characters when they're fully developed. So if you're screaming at me right now, you're right. They're not the same character. But can I see borrowed influences from Paul Atreides to Luke Skywalker? Yeah, I can see borrowed influences.
All right. Because I would say...
Now, your question is to Frank Herbert didn't care about the action. You're building up to the Battle of Arrakis. And it happens probably in the first third of the book. And man, this war between the Harkonnen and the Atreides is going to go down and it's going to be amazing. It takes about a page and a half, two pages. There's not much to it, okay? And you're sitting there going, man, that was supposed to be something amazing. In the meantime, he spent about six pages discussing how they were going to bill the expenses for mining the spice back to the Emperor as a tax deduction.
Yeah.
They spent a whole... like three or four pages about a council meeting about how they were going to bill expenses back to the Emperor.
So in other words, it's a lot more mythology or even detailed kind of history.
You have to love political intrigue. There is a lot of political intrigue and backroom intrigue. It is a slow developing story.
Cause it seems to me that Yeah. When you're talking about these kind of stories, you're not talking about actual focused science fiction. You're talking about a sci-fi setting being used to either tell a myth or a political drama, because it's clear that Frank Herbert really kind of borrowed from Shakespeare, even Oedipus Rex a little bit, and so did very much Lucas. So it's almost like, yeah, did Lucas borrow from Herbert? Yeah, in the same way that Herbert borrowed from others, because they weren't trying to tell a pure sci-fi story.
No, they're telling the oldest story out there. I mean, the story that was told around, you know, fires back in the day.
Sure.
Good versus evil. I mean, it's the simplest tale of good versus evil, and they just are doing it a little differently.
And some major borrowing from Eastern religions. You could see that from both of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, oh, yes. Yeah. Frank Herbert aggregated a lot of stuff, but I think he was telling a resource scarcity story.
Right.
Yes.
And that was a lot of where he was going with it. And he was also asking what would happen in the future if we didn't go forward technologically and we had to advance as a society without relying on every other piece of science fiction at that time showed how we would use technology.
Yeah, that's true.
To get to the future. And he had this idea of what happens if we simply expanded the human being.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of expanding the technology. If we couldn't rely on technology, what would we do? And you got Mentats, which are human computers.
That's right.
They can think and do calculations faster than the computer in their brain. Because you can't have a computer. So you have people who are trained to operate that way. We already talked about the Bene Gesserit. You also have sword masters like Duncan Idaho.
Yeah, they're still using knives.
They fight with swords. Because if you use a laser gun and someone's got a shield, it'll create a nuclear blast that'll wipe out everybody. So for the most part, you fight, you have your personal shield, and it'll defend you from the knife blow. And no one will use the laser gun because it will blow up everybody.
Okay.
And so fighting resorts back to hand-to-hand.
So I have a question.
And everything resorts back to feudalism, too, because they figure out you get this galactic galaxy of civilization, and you can't govern that with a democracy. And he asks, Would democracy or a republic be this government? And he says, no, we revert back to feudalism because that's the only way to rule a large, disparate, spread out territory.
I got to ask. So if they're kind of a little more harsh or anti-technology, then what's the take on the multiple clonings of Duncan Idaho?
So most of humanity has adopted the rules from the Butlerian Jihad, which is you should not make a machine in the mind of a man. You can make a machine, but it can't think. Okay? You can make, I mean, if the machine is capable of thinking any rudimentary artificial intelligence or programming logic, it can exist because humanity was once enslaved by a master thinking machine.
So a basic mechanical shovel is okay.
Yes, mechanical devices are okay. A microphone would be okay. But anything like your cell phone, nope, not okay, because it thinks. It can handle rudimentary programming. However, you have the planet Ix, I-X, which they hint later is for planet 9. There are 9 planets in its original solar system, because nobody knows where original Earth is either. But you have the Ixians, who make a lot of devices that is admitted that might actually be thinking machines. But they permit them because that planet's just a little bit different. And then you've got the Talaxu, which, boy, Star Trek, are you copying from that with the Talaxians? But you have the Talaxu.
But they're cloners, aren't they?
They are cloners. But they're not using machines to clone. Somehow. The Talaxu grow their clone in tanks without a thinking machine behind it, which, Bacta tank?
Which really, I mean, that kind of drives my point home that these guys are not writing sci-fi, because a science fiction author would at least, unless he was a stupid Hollywood movie, would at least try to explain how they managed to clone without technology. In the Talax suit, no, they have a way.
Okay, so
how do the Mentats work? They do.
I have to tell you that, I mean, Dune doesn't fit in another genre other than science fiction. You're talking about a far off future. And when you're talking about the future of humanity that is spread out to a galactic society, it doesn't fit in any other genre.
But it's
you can't
atypical.
Place it anywhere else.
It's very atypical of any sci-fi, though.
Of most science fiction, because science fiction is usually faster paced. But I'd also say that if you're trying to take one of the giants on any must-read list of science fiction, of an essential list of what you need to read, and take it out of science fiction, you're going to run up against a lot of resistance. Dune is not only science fiction. Dune is essential science fiction.
Yeah. Well, Thomas, we got to play catch-up now.
Apparently.
You do need to read Dune. If you haven't read at least the first Dune novel, you need to read it.
What's wrong with us?
I don't know. We're terrible people.
You're not terrible people. Like, look, there's a lot of Arthur Clarke that I haven't read, and you need to read Arthur C. Clarke. There's things on my list of essential science fiction I haven't read, but Dune belongs on that list.
Well,
it has
to
be.
Right now, we're talking about what Star Wars took from Dune. I actually say there's a, you know, series out there that probably took a lot more from Dune than Star Wars did.
What's that?
Warhammer 40K. I don't know if you guys know that.
I know it, but I've never actually looked into it. Enlighten us, if you will.
In the far distant future, mankind has devolved down to, you know, was a spacefaring empire that crashed and down and all that. It's basically gone to feudalism. Technology is used, but you can't advance it or research it. You just kind of go with what you have. War is eternal. You have a bunch of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of similarities. There are no AIs. You have enslaved human brains that do all your computing. So, I mean, there's some similarities, and that's what I'm saying. And that there is... That one, I would say, would stole a lot more than Star Wars ever did.
Okay, so I guess not to end it, but can say thanks, Frank Herbert?
Oh, yeah, Frank Herbert definitely came up with some good ideas that people have gone with.
Well, there's a ton of concepts in Dune that you almost have to run with. I mean, subconsciously, things from Dune are going to put their way into your mind. But,
I mean, well, he came up with a... universe that's a unique universe that I'm not as much into it as you guys are, definitely you, Scott, but from what I've, you know, dug up and looked at, it's a very extensive universe that has a lot going for it and has this political intrigue and all this stuff happening, which obviously you said took 6 pages on a trade negotiation for tax breaks, which, wow. But, I mean, it's a definitely in-depth world that he built.
Yeah, you have to be able to handle a slow pace and a slow build to get to where you want to be. But it's definitely well worth the read. I would also, you know, throw out there as another potential similarity, and I know that Rage Master doesn't agree, Gurney Halleck to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Gurney Halleck has no mystical powers, but Gurney Halleck is a warrior for Leto Atreides, and he teaches Paul how to fight, and he teaches Paul his basic combat, and Paul looks to Gurney as one of his mentors and one of his teachers. Duncan Idaho is Paul's best friend, which Duncan Idaho would serve the role of Anakin, or would serve the role of Obi-Wan if we're talking about Anakin. And Gurney would serve the role of Obi-Wan if we're talking about Luke. Yep. It's a weak tie, but if you follow it back, Gurney Halleck could be a stand-in for Obi-Wan Kenobi in the fact that Gurney Halleck is the aged warrior who teaches Paul how to fight.
I guess by that virtue, you might as well say Merlin, because I would say no, because
and was Lucas, friends with Paul's father,
because Lucas has gone out of his way to say that like Merlin or someone like that is more of an inspiration. Plus, I'm going to go by this. Look at Sir Alec Guinness and compare him to the description of Gurney, an ugly lump of a man.
Quick question.
So wait, right there.
Who played Gurney Halleck in the first Dune movie?
Patrick Stewart. But we all acknowledge.
Sir Alec Guinness? Sir Patrick Stewart?
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I going by the author's intent instead? Whoopsie, sorry me.
I'm choosing to see what I want to see.
Hey,
clearly.
Quick question, because I, again, don't know Dune quite well. What does Paul come and take over, doesn't it, somewhere along the lines?
Paul will eventually rule the entire known galaxy. After unleashing a terrible jihad that kills everybody. No, Leto, his son Leto, becomes the giant worm.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Leto. Oh, boy. So definitely a difference there in Star Wars.
Absolutely. But the giant worm is, you know, a tie-in towards Jabba.
Oh, and, you know, on top, speaking of kind of the things being similar and lining up, Scott, you'll be happy to know that according to Screen Rant, so take this as you will, the new Dune movie, half the script is done, but according to, what's that guy's name, Brian Herbert, he just received the fourth draft of Dune screenplay. It's for the first half of the movie, which covers half of the novel Dune. So, in other words, it seems like it's matching up kind of well.
So it's just going to be about the novel, the first novel. It's not going to try to do like the sci-fi movies did and do like
I don't know. The first three novels. I'd have to read more of the art. I'd have to keep reading.
That's, but, you know, the first half of the movie is the first half of the novel Dune. That sounds like they're going for the novel, and that's
but
good.
But the script isn't done yet.
But that's good.
The first half of the script. Because basically, it sounds like they're trying to match it up.
They really shouldn't try to get into Dune Messiah, because Dune was meant to be a standalone novel. It was not meant to be what it became, and demand for it got to where Frank Herbert wrote additional novels after that.
Well, he didn't end it with Rain on Arrakis, though.
No, he never ended it with Rain on Arrakis. So I think, though, where we're at here is, I think George Lucas is a different case than James Cameron, because George Lucas has come out and admitted that he went into the pantry of what had come before and took a dash of this and a bit of that and something from over here, threw it all in a blender, and what came out was Star Wars.
Well, yeah, you can see the concept art for Star Wars was like samurai, and you go, yeah.
He doesn't hide the fact, look, the Jedi are not the Bene Gesserit. Or if the Jedi are the Bene Gesserit, they're aspects of the Bene Gesserit mixed with Japanese samurai. And that...
Eastern religion.
Becomes that becomes an original concept. Now, just like I said, you know, hey, you might be saying, hey, you're a hypocrite. You didn't give James Cameron that. I kind of did. But so the Jedi, you take a little bit of the Bene Gesserit, you take a little bit of samurai, you take a little bit of Eastern religion, you throw them all together in a blender, and you get the Jedi. Is Tatooine Arrakis? Yeah, but you know what? I've got an all-desert planet. I mean, if you're going to go that route, it's not essential to the story, and it doesn't say, oh, well, Star Wars isn't something original because it takes place in a desert planet. It's Dune. No, the story being told in this desert planet is entirely different from the story being told on Dune.
Well, plus, that's just like saying then, oh, this takes place in a forest and that takes place in a forest, so they're the same thing.
You stole setting. Okay, but you told a different story in that setting. George Lucas stole from mythology. He took aspects of mythology. Star Wars is this weird thing that George Lucas stole everything in it from something. But in the meantime, came up with a completely original idea. I don't know how you steal everything in it and come up with something original, but the story of Star Wars isn't... You can't lift the story of Star Wars from something else. And it's kind of like what I said with Terminator. You don't actually have the story for Terminator laid out in any of those three Ellison stories that we talked about. You don't have the story for Star Wars at all laid out in Dune. Now, the original script? Woohoo! Maybe. So maybe there's a deeper pull here than we're looking at, but am I wrong here, guys? George Lucas is the ultimate aggregator.
Well, I would actually agree with you, because he stole from so many places, you can't really say, right, there's where he took his stuff from. It's like, he took from so many sources. I would say he took heavily from, and he's admitted taking heavily from Eastern cultures and samurai and Westerns and a whole bunch of things. So it's like, I don't know if you can point to anything and go, he stole from that or copied from that. He just took from everything and just took what he liked from everything and put it together.
I would say that Lucas, if you sickies ever want proof of this, stories build upon each other. And listen to the podcast Myths and Legends if you want examples of that. And that's what Lucas did. The reason I give Cameron less, the reason I give Cameron less leeway is because it's clear as day he took these three stories from this guy, and if you took them away, there'd be no Terminator.
I think there's also a difference. Go ahead.
And so I think that with Star Wars, he was trying to tell a mythology, which necessitates cobbling some things together, Whereas Terminator was, I like this, I like this, I like this. How can I plug them all together and make my own story with robots instead of
Star Wars? I think you could also take a few elements out and you'd still have Star Wars because it's like he took from so many sources that
it'd still be Star Wars.
But I think we also have, we started this show talking about expanding. And is it okay if you're expanding? So let's say for a second that the Jedi are heavily influenced from the Bene Gesserit. The power of the voice, the ability to communicate with people in the afterlife, okay? And other memory. They call it other memory.
Okay, for sake of argument, right?
Let's say there's an influence there. The Jedi are also expanded. Because while the Bene Gesserit are great fighters, the Jedi are great fighters only in terms of defensive necessity. They serve as the altruistic guardians of the galaxy. Whoa, hey. They serve,
different series.
They're the protectors of justice of the galaxy, the administrators of justice. The Bene Gesserit are never in that role. The Bene Gesserit are secretive and operating on their own benefit to protect their breeding program to ultimately create their own super being to take over the galaxy. That's not what the Jedi are doing, unless you talk to Emperor Palpatine. But there's a difference, and the Jedi are an expansion and an evolution of a concept introduced in the Bene Gesserit.
Okay. And the Bene Gesserit were also an evolution of any kind of Eastern, let's say, Brahmin or Guru.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was about to say, that, it's a heavily influenced by Eastern religion, and he's admitted...
I think there's
Sake of argument, I'm going to say yes. Even if we go for sake of argument that it's heavily, influenced, which I don't think it is, but for the sake of argument, I will say. I think it's Jedi, though, as I will agree with you here, is an evolution on it. Because even if that is the basis of it, they put so much on top of it and changed it in such a way that I don't think it resembles the original in that same element.
Well, that we got to remember, both of these guys wrote their stories during the era of kind of the counterculture movement, the new age movement that got started back then. Chris, I'm not to segue too far, but Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came from the concept of the crystal skulls, which were really big in the new age movement. So you're talking about two guys that were in a movement, in an era that was really big into Eastern mysticism and New Agey stuff. So they were going to be copying off that no matter what.
I think there's a difference here. I mean, Cameron was taking specific ideas and specific concepts and drawing them from one person and using those concepts as a framework for a partially 25% original story. And he merged them together and he created Terminator. George Lucas went from everything pop culture and said, I'm going to smash all of this together and tell this story I want to tell about this war in the galaxy. And I want to tell about wars in space. And I want to tell about this son who redeems his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good, and evil, yeah.
So he had this framework to tell a story about a son redeeming the father and an ultimate battle between good and evil. And then he said, this is the story I want to tell. Now let me pull in elements of it from everywhere that make the story I want to tell grow into this amazing thing. Whereas James Cameron said, hey, here's these three story pieces I want to tell. Let me jam them together and then try to put enough of my own idea in there so that it's not plagiarism.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, totally agree.
The Borg, which was where we started this, is another example of expansion. Okay, we need a cybernetic race. We need an ultimate villain. It's going to be a race of cyborgs. They're going to be evil, unthinking machines, something that the Federation can't reason with, something that we can't reflect an aspect of humanity in, like the Klingons are our war aspect, the Romulans are our political, secret government, paramilitary aspect. Okay, we can't show that side of us in them. The Vulcans are our logical, scientific aspect. We're going to create this enemy that is inhuman, is this cold, calculating enemy, and we're going to put the Federation in a fight or die spot, which is what they wanted to do with the Borg. So we came up with cyborgs.
Well, it's also the dark, deeper meaning. I mean, it's it's technology, the ultimate, you know, right. Technology can be evil and stuff. I mean,
you're fighting for your soul, because they're going to take your soul. And so when they did that, of course, they may have looked back and said, hey, Doctor Who did this. How can we use this as a framework and then build on that framework to come up with something that is unique to us? The Borg and the Cybermen are the same in the fact that they're both cybernetic enemies. They're different in the fact that the Borg are a hive mind and the Cybermen are not.
Not as much, no.
And right. The Cybermen, if you shut off their inhibitor in the newer, in the new iteration, they revert back to being humans immediately almost, whereas the Borg have to take a long, torturous journey to get there if they ever do.
Unless you're the brilliant Tower of Iron Will mind of Jean-Luc Picard.
Right, then it doesn't apply.
Well, now here's the thing. What we're saying is copying happens, yes. It's the degree of copying that matters. And the evolution sometimes can be good.
Are you expanding upon an idea to create your own original take on an idea?
Yeah.
If I throw a cybernetic villain into my science fiction script, it's not necessarily stealing from the Borg if I change their motivation. Maybe these are cybernetic beings that act as individuals and that still have some emotion and humanity left, but it's tempered with an ability to think logically. And maybe they can switch back and forth between the two. And maybe their objective isn't to assimilate the rest of the universe and to take away their individualism, but their objective is to make the universe more efficient while allowing this individuality. I'm still lifting heavily from the Borg, and if I give them a different look, and I give them a different objective, and I give them a different organizing structure for their society, instead of being a hive mind reporting up through a queen, then maybe I've expanded upon an idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I've created the ultimate synthesis of machine and man, to where you gain all the benefits of the machine without losing any of the benefits of the man.
Well, again,
or the woman.
Both of these that we've talked about, these are both very much big ideas that it's not. Again, we talked last week about very key points. It's like you can point to this, this, and this. In this area, we're talking about bigger ideas overall. We're talking about, you know, in Cybermen, we're talking about, you know, cyber organisms and, you know, androids and things like that. That's a bigger idea. When we're talking about, you know, Doom, we're talking about the advancement of a human species and, you know, feudalism and government. And this is big ideas. This isn't what we pointed at before, which was point by point. This is just large, giant ideas that have so much room that you can breathe into them and take from them. You can do so much more with that.
In the first week, we talked about incidental copying. And there's probably no attempt by Joss Whedon to copy Outlaw Star.
Nope.
No.
It's entirely incidental. In week two, we talked about blatant stealing of an idea to create the framework for your own partially original story.
Mm-hmm.
And in week three, we have talked about two cases where creators have expanded upon existing ideas, putting their own unique twist on that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
don't
think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
And I think what you got in both cases was something great. The Borg are one of the best creations in science fiction. And Star Wars is the gold standard. The Star Wars trilogy is the first Star Wars, and we've talked about this in my mind, you know, Rage Master will say Empire. In my mind, the first Star Wars is the perfect epic action science fiction drama. Is it the perfect science fiction film? No. But is it everything you want as the prototype for a science fiction action film? Yes. You can't ask for better in my mind.
Okay.
And that's where expanding upon original idea, you're still creating.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say George Lucas isn't a creator. And you can't say that the Star Trek writers who came up with the concept of the Borg didn't create something and add to the uniqueness of the science fiction landscape.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. So in this case, I would say not copied.
I'd say it's copied. I'd say it's influenced.
It's
influenced.
Yeah.
It's acceptable copying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of these
instances. It's transformative work, to use the legal term.
There we go.
Okay.
It is a transformative work. It is not din 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 versus dun 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 dun.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't get your little symbol at the end. Yeah, but no, there's definitely enough differences that it's not a straight up copy.
Scott, I want to leave off with a fun thing that occurred to me too. While I was, and I'm, we're not going to go into this. I just want to leave off with a think about this. So at the Doctor Who episode I was watching today, it was the Age of Steel. And the doctor was talking to that Dr. Limus or whatever, who got transformed, who got put inside the mind of a Cyberman, inside of a body. And he was kind of the data driver. And the doctor was trying to steal time and help out his assistant who was watching through a camera. And so they were talking about emotions, and he was saying, you need emotions. This is what makes the planet lively. Just being cold machines doesn't make it good. And the doctor says, have you ever felt pain or remorse? Yes, but I need my pain because that's how I develop and grow. So
does I need
that,
my pain.
Does that copy off of Star Trek V?
I need my pain.
Because I was listening to your time loop review, and it makes me think, did that copy off of Star Trek V? Just think about, mull over that. No need to go into it now, if you would. I just thought...
And you know what? Send us your answers at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. That's our email address. Or drop us a line on Twitter at Sci-Fi Malady. Or log on to our website. Not log on to our website. Just go to our website and leave us comments under this posted episode at ravinglunaticmedia.com.
The sickness must flow, so may the sickness be with you.
Raving Lunatic Media! .com